And we're live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMP podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty. And today we're going to discuss Falcon and the Winter Soldier with Jason Tondreau. Hey, Jason.
Hey.
And down below us in the Alice position, pretty much great, is Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello.
Hey. So, spoiler alert, because we're talking about the episode, and I haven't seen it, unfortunately. My weekend was stolen from me in various ways. So I'm going to have to rely on you guys completely for the content for this episode. So. Sure. Who wants to go first?
Jacob, it's you all along, so, you know.
Fair enough. Well, I am so far very intrigued by Falcon and Winter Soldier. It is incredibly different than the than WandaVision, sure. in that which had a very slow burn to start. This one is in the tradition of action comics. It starts out with a bang. It is an pulse pounding, heart thumping, amazing action opening, yeah, which is nonstop, and it was really fun to watch. But yeah, it looks like we're getting a little more of seeing what the world is like. Yeah. Really, just a couple of months after everyone is returned from the snap. And what the repercussions of that has been to the world economy.
Yeah. I like the world building as well. And I'm not here to say Thanos is right. Okay. Like I'm not the Thanos is right guy, but his point is that if there's half as many people, then everybody is twice as wealthy as they were. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes ago, right? And when you restore everybody, that creates it's a very interesting, logically it creates a bit of a recession, as yep. a bunch of people have to divide all their wealth in half again, or not, yep. Depending on who they are. Yeah, it's I like the world building too, and I agree with you. The opening, the action sequence at the beginning with Falcon, where we really get to see him kind of by himself in his element. The fact that they brought back Batroc the Leaper.
I was really happy to see Batroc the Leaper again.
I was like, you know, it doesn't take much for me. So I was sold. Like, okay, Batroc's in. I'm in.
Oh, yes. But yeah, you know, I was watching a few things where people were talking about what the world would be like in that 5 years of the snap. And they were like, well, we have something to draw upon, which is the Black Plague. If you look at Europe just after the Black Plague, you know, almost half the population was wiped out. So suddenly, you know, businesses were doing better. People were doing better because they had more money. They had more food. All the resources were going much, much longer and farther.
As someone who's actually taught this in my Renaissance literature courses, like the effect of the Black Death meant that because there was now a labor shortage, there had never before been, right? Like before, if you needed people, the people were the one thing we had too many of, right?
Yeah.
But now there's a labor shortage, which means that wages go up.
Yeah.
Right? So now we've flooded all those people back. So now wages start sinking, right? There's all kinds of interesting ramifications of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard, but we just had a huge peal of thunder here. So if I suddenly disappear, you'll know why.
we'll know that you've been hacked, Axel.
If it was a few years earlier, I'd make some joke about Asgard being in Oklahoma, but that's old Marvel Comics now.
So. Love if Asgard would show up in Oklahoma. You know what that would do to all the Bible thumpers around here? They would lose their damn minds. I'm liking the story that this is presenting, much like WandaVision, where it was based on a classic comic. This one too, it seems to be based on a classic Captain America comic, where they were bringing in the story of Flag Smasher and his villain group Ultimatum, and the rise and the response of the United States bringing in the U.S. agent.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
Is this guy on the right, is that U.S. agent?
can you not tell based on the stripes of his costume? As soon as I saw the Captain America cut, but it had the stripes on his chest, I knew that was U.S. agent.
I mean, they're not calling him that yet.
Yeah, they call him Captain America.
He's Captain America,
but it's absolutely U.S. agent.
Yeah.
Does old man Steve show up at all?
No, we haven't seen him.
There is. You hear the line from Endgame when he says it's yours now, or it feel like it belongs to somebody else, and old man Steve says it's not. It doesn't. Something like that. We hear that excerpt, but that's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it's pretty obviously U.S. agent in the fact that the cut of the costume, the design of the costume, plus the shield and the gun on his belt. Something else I was going to say to that effect. Much like WandaVision, I'm sure the MCU is going to be twisting around the story and making their own thing of it. But it looks like we're going to have Falcon in the role of Cap for this story and Winter Soldier in the role of Nomad, I believe.
Well, to me, I found it very interesting. And you're right. They are drawing on, I think, that old both. They're drawing on a lot of different comic shows, much like when we were watching WandaVision. And we were finding elements of both of the different Wanda, Scarlet Witch and Vision limited series that had gone on. We were finding elements of Burns Run. We were finding bits of House of M. There's a bunch of stuff that all kind of goes into plot. That's also happening with this show. So, yeah, the John Walker Captain America replacement storyline is there. But also the whole run where Falcon takes over being Captain America, right? I forget who wrote that run, but that's obviously there. The Bucky story where Bucky takes over being Captain America. I think that there's a debate going on here about kind of what Captain America means. Falcon and Bucky are both thinking about that. The thing most people are commenting on from this first episode is that we never see the two title characters together. Falcon is off in his own story with his family issues. Bucky's off on his own redemption story where he's trying to atone for his century of being a Soviet assassin. And he gets these sessions with his therapist, you know. And I love the therapy sessions because it's clear that his therapist is a military veteran. And she talks about how when she was in the field. It strikes me as a neat kind of Marvel Universe version of The Sopranos, you know, with his therapist. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. And we also see the therapist show up in trailers where she's talking to both of them together. Mm-hmm. That scene probably doesn't even appear in the show. It was probably filmed just for the trailers. But I like it. I think what we're getting here is some really great questions about the military and about the role of the military and about the military life. Bucky's problem is that he's pulled the pin. He has left the military life and now he has to figure out how to survive, what to do in a world where he's not a soldier. As he puts it very well in the show, he's been told what to do for basically a century.
And not only that, but a world he's not used to living in.
That's right. That's right. And it reminded me very much of some of those scenes from The Hurt Locker. If you remember Hurt Locker, that wonderful film that Jeremy Renner plays, our Marvel connection. He plays a military veteran who comes back to America and he just can't function. You know, like he's used to making these incredible life and death decisions where, like, you know, if he clips a wire wrong, everybody dies. And then his wife tells him, like, pick a box of cereal. And he's standing in the cereal aisle surrounded by 100 different kinds of cereal. And he can't decide because there just seems to be no purpose to it. Like, what does it matter? It just doesn't matter anymore. And he can't connect to ordinary human life. And this is Bucky's problem. He's in a situation where what he can do anything. And that's what his therapist is telling him. Like, you can do whatever you want. He's like, yeah, but what? Right, and I love that. Now, presumably, you know, the a danger is gonna arise. There's gonna be a problem, and Bucky's gonna throw himself into it because that's the solution to his dilemma, right? Like, I don't know what to do, so I guess I'll go save the world again, right? Because that's what I know how to do. But I would like to see Bucky come to a more interesting answer by the end of this show than just I'm gonna be a superhero fighting bad guys all the time. Right? Yeah. Let's give that guy a chance. Yeah.
So is Sharon Carter in this one?
We know she's going to be. She has not shown up in the first episode.
Yeah, she's in the end credits. We get a shot of her in the end credits, mm-hmm. but she is not in the first episode yet.
With the vagaries and chaotic nature of time travel, is she going to remember she kissed Steve? And will she remember that Steve is now her uncle?
I have no idea. Okay. Presumably that's all an alternate time stream. Like, Steve is only her uncle in the alternate time stream, where presumably he also chooses not to kiss her. In this timeline, she'll remember kissing him, but he's not her uncle.
All right.
Presumably. I mean, I don't know. But I'm looking forward to seeing her show up. I liked the actress and I liked the character. And also, interestingly, they have gender-swapped Flag Smasher.
Yeah, I saw that. That's interesting.
That's right. So Flag Smasher is now a woman. Now, superhero shows have this, and comics do it too. They have this obsession with having female heroes have to have female villains. Mm-hmm. So Wanda and Vision each had a gender-matched archenemy, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering if Flag Smasher is going to kind of turn into specifically Sharon Carter's bad guy.
I mean, because it's, I don't know, just my hunch, but isn't it a lot more fun to have Bucky and Sam trading quips with Sharon in the clubhouse, you know, or in the car on the way to a mission than just, you know, Bucky and Sam by themselves might wear thin after a while.
Well, it's a buddy cop show, right?
Yeah.
Like the buddy cop formula is pretty tried and tested, and mm-hmm. they'll bring on Sharon, but you don't need Sharon to have the two buddies go at it.
She could be Joe Pesci.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly who she is, Joe Pesci.
Oh, Lord, I hadn't thought about that.
But they also showed that Flag Smasher has superhuman strength. She's got Captain America level strength. And Jim, who could not be with us today, theorized that she is actually the Red Skull's daughter.
That was my theory as well. I think she might be Sin.
I think it's interesting that the Flag Smasher outfit was originally all black and white, mm-hmm. but now she's wearing a red mask, and that can't be an accident, right?
Well, it's like a claw thing. I'm not sure that's an iconography I'm not really used to seeing in Marvel. So we'll see. Like usual. I'll try not to theorize and see where it goes. I was thinking maybe that's Cynthia. I don't know. I'm just random thoughts that go through my head when I watch these things.
It looked like the Saruman's white hand on her face, except red. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting because Marvel usually takes care of major villains in one movie and you never hear from them again. To have some kind of a callback, even as a progeny, would be a break from the usual. And I dug up some of the old Flag Smasher art.
They've already brought back Batroc. I mean, this is a...
He's a mercenary. He can show up anywhere they need him to be.
And he lives! He lives to come back again!
Yeah, and I mean... I wouldn't be surprised if he has a face turn at some point in this show, because Batroc he's got a code, as they say.
I doubt he would. We should not speculate, but I would be genuinely surprised if he ever shows up again in this series at all.
Yeah, okay. the way he showed up in the first episode, it seemed like, you know, this is something he was hired to do, and I'm not sure we're going to be seeing him again. If we do, I'll be pleasantly surprised because, you know, yay more Batroc. But you know, I don't expect it.
He actually has the exact same role he has in Winter Soldier, which is to show up and establish the superhero's bona fides. Right? Like, for people who haven't seen Winter Soldier, like they know who kind of who Captain America is, but like, okay, well, how good is he? So we had a whole intro sequence where he beats up Batroc and all of Batroc's men.
And let me say, this intro made Falcon just an absolute badass. There are people who are always like, Falcon's just Captain America's sidekick. What does he do? He flies. Oh, wow. He flies. It's like, he's Captain America's friend and partner. Yeah. You don't get to hang out with Captain America for years and years and years and not be a badass.
And this show establishes him as having a lot of high tech. Yes. He relies on his technology a lot. Yeah. Not only do the wings do like the bulletproof shield thing, but he's got like Red Wing, which is this drone with like a laser and missiles and a machine gun and all kinds of stuff. So he's like got like a little Iron Man on his back, and Red Wing pulls a lot of weight in that opening sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. Hey, I wanted to bring up some inside baseball stuff because it's the BAM podcast and we do that, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Don't we always talk comic stuff? I mean, heck, you're gonna be talking Snyder Cut with Sean Isaacs, who's drawing Fantastic Four at Marvel tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But let's see. Yeah, over here, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Ed Brubaker, who created the Winter Soldier, was not so happy. I mean, he had mixed feelings about this show because. Have you heard about this, Jason?
Well, no, but I'm not surprised. And go on. I have a feeling my Brubaker would not be happy, but let's see what.
Well, he likes Sebastian Stan, Sam. He likes Mackie, thinks they're great actors and says nice things about them. But it was a work-for-hire contract. And, I mean, even though the character of Bucky was invented in the 1940s, Bucky as a Winter Soldier wasn't around until Ed Brubaker brought him back. And he hasn't really been compensated at all, you know, and Bucky is now, you know, he's – you know, a major part of the MCU and the creator. Yeah, so that's the gist of it.
Well, Brubaker deserves to be paid. There is absolutely no question about that. And Jacob, you'll agree, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a lot of personal mixed feelings about the character of Winter Soldier. I like the Winter Soldier as he's been presented in the MCU. But I am pissed at the general idea of the Winter Soldier because yet another character who has not stayed dead.
Yeah.
Hey, how are we doing? What's up here?
So
now there's
we can still hear you, Mike.
Ben, right?
You about something? I didn't want to dismiss it.
Okay. I don't know if still on the meeting. I'll text you later. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Take care.
Okay.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
But yeah, it's always been that Bucky was supposed to be one of those sacrosanct deaths that would never change. And then him, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Did you close the door, please?
It always sat wrong with me. You were live that entire time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was my kid's karate class. I was just wrapping it up. I should have muted. Forgive me.
That's all right. I thought that Brubaker would be upset because he created the Winter Soldier. He brought Bucky back so that Bucky could be Captain America. I mean, that was always the intention of that plot line, was that Cap would get shot or would retire, and Bucky would take over, and we'd have this kind of examination of what Captain America means for the 2000s, you know, like that era where Cap is – got a pistol on his hip and he's dressed mostly in black. And it was a question of, you know, like, what does it mean for me to be Captain America? The fact that it is a money issue is actually much more straightforward because he totally deserves to get paid for that. He's absolutely right. Yes, Bucky was created in 1941, but the Winter Soldier and the stories that they are using are deeply indebted to Brubaker's run. There would not be a Winter Soldier movie without Brubaker's run on that book, and he deserves to be paid.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I thought that was interesting to bring up. So you guys looking forward to next week?
Absolutely. Yeah. Jacob, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. You've seen it. What did you think of the body count? a lot of people were noting that there was a pretty high body count in this episode.
Well, yes. In terms of violence and actual deadly violence, the body count was pretty high. But one has to keep in mind the context to which what is happening.
Yeah.
In this instance, Falcon was operating as a soldier,
yeah,
not as a superhero.
Yeah.
And as such, he was operating by wartime rules.
You know, to me, quite frankly, I think people forget how many people get killed in all of these movies, especially yes. Captain America's film. The Winter Soldier is filled with...
Oh, the Winter Soldier is a lot of death.
And, but, of course, it's all bloodless, right? Mm. Like it's like sanitized, highly choreographed, bloodless death. I remember watching that show with my students. I was doing a section on superheroes in film, and we had watched everything from the 78 Superman and through to a few other films, and we finally watched Winter Soldier towards the end, and yeah, like, you know, they just kill a lot of people in these movies, but it's all kind of as clean as possible, and it's made so that it doesn't offend people. And quite frankly, I think that it's designed so that we don't notice all the people that are getting killed, right? Like
it's a lot of comic and more 1980s cartoon violence where you see the guns go off, you see people falling, but yeah. you don't see the blood spray. That's yeah. very popular in today's action movies, which
yeah.
which a lot of the times is CGI and yeah. blood packs, which are wholly unnecessary because sometimes people just fall. You don't have to go.
It's kind of that highly choreographed, sanitized violence that we got from The Matrix. Right?
Yes,
where like
yes.
everything is super cool, all the violence is super slick and choreographed.
Yeah,
but it's all like completely bloodless and painful.
My thought during that first action scene was, how many helicopters did Batroc bring? I think it was five.
Quite a few.
Those are expensive pieces of equipment.
Yeah. He's getting those Casco helicopters. They're a little cheaper.
Well, Batroc and his men like do this. They do this long fight sequence where they're in glider suits going yeah. from helicopter to helicopter, and Falcon's like fighting helicopters and gliding people, and they've kidnapped a guy, so you've got all of that going on. It's a pretty interesting and high energy sequence. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it's a good action scene.
That is kind of cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Maybe tonight. Do we know how many episodes are going to be in this?
There are 6 total episodes in this series.
Okay. Wait a minute. I thought there was 10.
I read 6, but if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and hopefully there's 10.
Well, now I have to find out. Mike can probably look it up faster than me.
Probably. All right, let me stop sharing and see what I can do. How many episodes?
Six. You're right, 6.
And then Loki has 6, too.
Okay.
And whenever What If comes out, that has 10.
Well, so we can look at how it's going to break down, right? Like the first 2 episodes are the beginning. Mm-hmm. We're going to set everything up. Expect Sharon probably next episode. And then episodes 3 and 4 are the middle. And then they'll blow everything out for the last 2.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it. So final verdict on this first episode. You guys are both positive?
Yeah, so far it's been fun.
Yeah, now I do want to urge anybody that's watching it, 2 things. First off, it's kind of a slow burn. We've talked about the high action of the opening. But after that, there's a lot of the 2 characters kind of apart, dealing with their own individual issues. Like,
yeah.
there's a big race issue to this episode with Sam and his family. Sam's family is financially in trouble. They've got this boat and their family house. that they inherited from their parents, and his sister wants to sell it. I'm convinced they added the sister and the kids almost so they could do the Uncle Sam joke. But the sister wants to sell it, and Sam doesn't. And they go to a bank to get a loan, and Sam is convinced that because he is this superhero, he will be able to get the loan. But he doesn't. They won't give it to him. And she, his sister, specifically suggested it's because of race. That, well, it's amazing how everything gets tighter when you know it's our turn, you know. And that's part of some very interesting conversations, I think. And then the other half of this all is Bucky doing a lot of brooding, and he tries to have a date. He gets set up on a date, and of course they play Battleship in a bar, which I found hilarious.
But with shots.
Yeah, with shots. Yeah. What I love is that he's trying to be truthful. Like the girl says, like, wait a minute, how old are you? And he says 106, like that. Like he really rapidly, like how old are you? 106. And she just laughs. And he gets this look on his face like, why don't you believe me? Like, what am I supposed to do? And he ends up just walking out of the date. Don't go in and give it a couple of episodes to get the characters together, to establish the problem, and kind of get everybody kind of focused. But we have to show where the characters are at the beginning of the series in order for the end to have any meaning. For them, if they're going to go someplace at the end, we got to show where they are at the start. And they're taking their time on that, and I kind of like it. The second thing is, I just want to know very briefly, the second thing is if you want to read the comics, there's a lot of comics to read. There's the Brubaker run with Winter Soldier. There's the Falcon run where he takes over as Captain America. There's the old U.S. agent run when Steve Rogers is just the captain. So there's a lot of comics going into the pop.
This is true. Jacob, what do you say?
I pretty much have to agree with Jason there. There's a lot of stories that are being pulled on here, and so I'm liking where it's going. I'm liking what they've done so far, and I look forward to more.
Cool. Well, I'll check it out tonight, and I'll be able to weigh in to some degree next week. Hey, completely unrelated. Have you guys seen Leslie Jones tweeting along with the Snyder Cut?
I saw you post that, and I watched them, and that was hilarious.
So hilarious. What I love about it is that she does like the movie.
Yes.
That's kind of what gets it over, I think, is you can tell she's really enjoying herself, even while pointing out some of the crazy stuff.
But it's also really funny, yeah. I have not seen Zack Snyder's Justice League yet. I have no great desire to see it. But if I could have Leslie Jones sitting next to me the whole time, I would totally be there tonight.
Yeah, if I could get Leslie Jones to narrate a whole lot of movies, I would probably watch that. Yeah, for sure. Dust Boat, that's maybe the top of the list. Do you guys, can I show just one real fast?
Yeah.
Anyone object? All right, it's a tweet. It'll be short. There we go. Leslie Jones, share audio. And full size. And...
Man, you can't do shit. Shish kebab! And then we have a super sock to the chin. And then Wonder Woman comes in with a Hi-yuken! Send the head to the other side. They had to stand there and watch that boy get dead like that. And y'all can't even come do nothing because the three boxes got separated. So, yeah, we just gonna send that over there super cut for you. That's your boy. Oh, don't squash him now. Come over. Come through. Come through, though. Why don't you come through, though? Come through, though. Thanos' cousin. Come on, Thanos' cousin. We waiting for you, motherfucker.
All right. I think that got the flavor.
You know, what I love about it is that she also, like, explains the plot. Wow. So if you have forgotten what the three cubes are, like she's sort of filling you in. It is like she's sitting next to you, like filling you in on the movie as you're watching it. There was a couple of other folks I also follow on Twitter, also called Darkseid like Thanos' cousin, like Thanos Light. And those of us that read the comics and know that Jim Starlin created Thanos as a Darkseid knockoff on his first issue of Iron Man, because he never thought he would get another bite at the apple. It's just hilarious. But you know what? They don't care. Like, people like you, Mike, and Jacob, and I, you know, we go deep into these books and we're like referring to all the comics they come from. 95% of America does not give a shit. They don't care about any of that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because they'll always think that Darkseid is a Thanos knockoff instead of the other way around.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of characters that they get enough spotlight. Like, Oscar Isaac's Moon Knight show. Yeah. If they're not careful with that, that might look like one of the last six iterations of Batman that are still living with the public consciousness.
Yeah, but maybe better. I mean,
we always have to remember Darkseid's humble beginnings as well.
Go on.
His first appearance was in Jimmy Olsen, Superman's Best Friend.
For sure, for sure.
That was where he first showed up.
So Kirby comes over to DC after Stan refuses to give him a raise. And DC says, okay, well, what do you want? And he says, I can do four books at a time. I can write and draw four books at once. And I know, right? Like, and so, but he doesn't want to kick anybody else off of their books. So he says, give me whatever book sells the worst. And I'll take that one. And then I'll do three other new ones at the same time. So they give him Jimmy Olsen, Superman's pal. And of course, he just completely throws out whatever was going on in the book before then, and he makes it into all about Darkseid and Darkseid's minions, and we see Apocalypse and all that stuff. Yeah, the hardbacks are a wonderful bargain if anyone ever wants to read those books. The Fourth World Omnibus is like four volumes that reproduces every Kirby story that he got out before eventually all of those books were canceled.
I got a feeling I'm going to be doing a lot more reading of old trades now that new books are going to be costing $6 each. So
Yeah. Trades are pretty much going to be the thing.
Yeah. There's just no other way. So that are, yeah, definitely. All right. Well, guys, this has been fun. We'll do this again in 7 days. To all of our listeners and viewers out there, thanks for checking us out, and we'll catch you next time on the BAMP podcast.